quite meek and mild, a bit like in the carols, away in the manger, no crib for the bed, the little Lord Jesus lays down his sweet head. You can imagine some kind of very passive, gentle baby. And when he grows up, he gets angry sometimes, like when he turned over the tables, but I think you can, I've thought of Jesus as being quite meek and mild. But today's passage is from the Sermon on the Mount, which is really the greatest hits of his teaching. And this turn the other cheek phrase, I think it's become a bit of a shorthand for just ignore something, don't make a fuss, rise above it. And understood like that, it could be used to support this view of Jesus as being quite meek and mild. It can seem like he's been advocating to be just a bit of a doormat. It's fine, just let someone slap you again. Don't do anything. But the more that I've read the Bible and learnt about Jesus, the more I've realised he's definitely not a meek and mild kind of person. He is actually usually very intentional and very radical in what he says. It's just that we need to understand the original context. So I heard some teaching. I've been studying theology for the last couple of years, and I heard some teaching about this passage, which completely changed my understanding of it. And that's what I wanted to share today. I've also need to do a shout out to the Bible Project. I found a podcast and an article about it, which I've borrowed from heavily. So that's been very helpful. So as in a lot of Jesus's parables and things, there are three scenarios. We know them as turn the other cheek, give them your coat as well, and go the extra mile. But before that, Jesus says, you've heard it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. And Jesus is contrasting his approach with the ancient law code of retaliation in the Old Testament of an eye for an eye. So if you put on the next slide, please. Thank you. Of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. So this sounds very brutal to us. But actually, it was a way of limiting the revenge to something equivalent. And usually, they wouldn't actually physically attack each other. You'd place a nominal value on the eye or the tooth or the whatever it is. A bit like today, when an insurance company, if you've had a certain injury, you might get paid a certain amount. In practice, it usually worked like that rather than actually taking out someone's eye. But the main point was to put a ceiling on the retaliation, to prevent the escalation of violence, because I think Jesus knows that our human tendency is for the injured party to really go way over the top in terms of revenge. And we see that today, like in the Middle East, the Hamas, 7th of October attacks were appalling, and I think about 1,200 people were killed. But now in Gaza, at least 60,000 people have died. So, I don't want to comment on that particularly, but just we can see that actually as humans we're not very good at limiting our revenge to something equivalent. So this system is actually a way of trying to say, if you've injured me, then you have to pay a certain amount and then it's done. We're not going to have an escalation. And then Jesus said, but I tell you, so he's saying, instead of an eye for an eye, I tell you, do not resist an evil person. And this sounds a bit odd, and it can be very difficult to translate according to the Bible Project. So my theological studies haven't extended to ancient Greek, well, not yet anyway. I think this, according to the Bible Project, I think this phrase can actually be better understood as don't resist an evil person in kind. So sort of don't repay evil for evil or violence for violence. But it's Jesus gives us these three examples to illustrate what he meant. So if we get onto those, the first one is, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn your other cheek also. So I've got a prop to help me with this bit, to try and illustrate the point, because it took me some time to get my head around it. So this is Pablo. This is one of Dora's bedtime toys. there we go. So if I want to slap Pablo on the right cheek, so it says, I'll try and prop Pablo up. Jesus specifies a slap on the right cheek. So actually the first thing to say about slapping is that it's not meant to be a physical attack. It's more of an insult, really. So if you were in a really violent situation, someone would, if you wanted to really hurt someone, you'd probably punch them rather than slap them. So this is not meant to speak into any kind of domestic violence or anything like that. I think these passages I read have sadly been used in the past by people to justify like a domestic violence situation or something like that, to say, you know, stay with someone, turn the other cheek, that kind of thing. But all the commentaries that I've read have made it really clear that that's not what Jesus meant. We're talking about an insult, a slap's an insult, rather than a kind of violent situation. So, having got that out of the way, Jesus specifies if someone slaps you on the right cheek. So people would have used their right hand for slapping, because that's their dominant hand. And I think nowadays, you know, people are allowed to be left-handed and things. Back then, just your right was your dominant hand and that was your slapping hand. So if I slap someone on the right cheek, Pablo, for example, I'd slap him with the back of my hand like that. And that's important because that's a dominant position. Striking someone with the back of their hand is something that a master would do to a slave, or a superior person would do to someone who works for them or something like that. So it's slapping someone like that is asserting my dominance over Pablo, saying I'm superior to you, and it's humiliating Pablo. So what happens if I slap Pablo like that, you naughty slave, get away from me or whatever, and instead of backing down and just sneaking away, going off crying or something, Pablo turns the other cheek. So if Pablo does that, then I have to slap him. If I want to slap the other cheek, I have to do it like that. So that's with the palm of my hand. And that's important because that's a different posture. Slapping someone with the palm of your hand is what you would do to an equal person in Jesus's time. So this is in the first century Jewish culture. So Jesus is not suggesting that people should stand around and take abuse. He's also not suggesting that Pablo slaps me back, because if Pablo is my slave, that would probably be fatal for Pablo. I'd just have him, you know, killed or whatever. But instead, he's suggesting that Pablo does something really brave and stands firm and rejects my treatment of him. So by turning the other cheek, he's rejecting the insult and he's rejecting the power dynamic. And he's saying, I'm not going to behave like your inferior. He's challenging me to slap him again, but this time to slap him as an equal. So that this kind of action changes the relationship. It's pushing me to either back down and think, oh, I probably shouldn't have slapped him in the first place, or to slap as an equal, and it's changing our relationship. So Pablo's kind of reclaiming his dignity from me trying to take it away by slapping with the back of my hand. So I think the main thing to take away is that it's not a submissive doormat type thing to do. It's actually a very defiant act when we understand it in this way. So that's the first one. The second one says, you can go on to the next slide. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. So again, we need to go back to first century Jewish society to understand the meaning of this and how it would have been understood by the original people. So I was just wondering if anyone here has more than one coat. Could you put up your hand if you have more than one coat of any description, like raincoat, warm coat, summer coat? Yeah, so I think that's everyone, or pretty much everyone. So nowadays, we have lots of clothes compared to back then. We have T-shirts, long sleeve shirts, all sorts of things, raincoats, warm coats. And even, I think, in our society, a modest person would have more than one coat. But back then, standard dress was two garments, as Pablo's wearing, something underneath, a kind of shirt, and a coat on top. And the outer coat would have been thick and warm and quite valuable for keeping out the elements. And then they'd have had an inner shirt that they wore next to their skin. And most people that Jesus was speaking to would have only had one of each. You know, more rich people might have had a few coats, but most people would have just actually had one of each, especially only one coat. So this scenario is about where one person has demanded a person's inner garment, so they've taken off their shirt and given it to them because they've had to for some court case. So then Jesus is suggesting that they voluntarily give up the coat as well. So in this case, we would take off all of the clothing. So that's Pablo's coat, and he's already given me his shirt as part of the court case. There we go. So Firstly, it's an exceedingly generous thing to do. His coat, as you can see, is very valuable. and he's voluntarily given it to me. So, you know, the people might be thinking, gosh, why would he do that? But actually, a bit like turning the cheek, it's not a passive response because it draws attention to his plight. So now what's happened is Pablo's here and he's naked and I'm here and I'm holding all of his clothes. So this doesn't look good, does it? People around, and you know, this is making a scene. We've got someone naked here and I've got all his clothes. So this is not a good look for me. So today and also back then, it would have been shameful to be naked in public. But it was shameful to see someone who was naked, so it's also shameful for me to see Pablo naked. And it draws attention, it's causing a scene. So it draws attention to the injustice that's going on here. So in his act of generosity by giving up the cloak, it's also a way of shaking things up and drawing attention to the situation. And the obvious vulnerability of someone who doesn't have any clothes kind of might force me to reflect on my position and think, maybe I shouldn't have done that. And for the people around as well, they're going to be judging me and thinking, well, why would you do that? So in a radically generous kind of gesture, it's also highlighted the injustice that's going on. So a bit like turning the cheek, it's kind of forcing people in the situation to reevaluate their position. So on to the last scenario. Jesus then said, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them two. So the background to this is that in the first century, Roman soldiers could legitimately force someone to carry loads with them for up to a Roman mile. And this practice would kind of reduce that person to a forced labourer, really. They'd have to stop what they were doing. But even in the Roman Empire, they recognised the scope for abuse of this. So it was limited to 1 mile. You couldn't force someone to carry your stuff further. So, for example, I'm now a Roman soldier, and my pack would have been, like, really heavy. Oh, massive heavy. Okay. So I've got to carry my pack all the way. My garrison's in Weston or somewhere, so I've got to carry this all the way to there, but I don't want to carry my bag because it's really heavy. So I'm going to make you Dawn. You have to come with me now for 1 mile and carry my bag. So that's about as far as Iwood, Lane, Orpool, that kind of area. I don't care you're in the middle of church, that you're listening to the best sermon you've ever heard, or you're cooking your dinner, or you're looking after your kids or whatever. I say you've got to come with me, and I'm a Roman soldier, so that's what you've got to do. Okay, so this is the scenario we're facing. So Jesus is saying, after you get that far, after you get to the first mile, what you're going to then do is say, no, that's fine. I've carried it a mile, but I'll go the extra mile. I'll come all the way with you to Middlecombe Nursery. That's about 2 miles away. So firstly, we think, well, this sounds a bit odd. So Jesus is speaking to this group of Jews who suffered this kind of loss of dignity and demeaning behaviour. But for the first mile, they've lost their dignity. The soldiers told them what they have to do, and they have to do it. If they go that extra mile, that's their choice then. They're choosing to go the second mile. And they're treating the Roman soldier with generosity as one might treat a family or friend. Say, no, it's fine, I'll carry it further for you. So the idea is that this is kind of embarrassing for the soldier. It might, again, similar to the other scenarios, it causes them to question their choices. And for the person who's going the extra mile, they're reclaiming their dignity and saying, I'm not accepting your treatment of me as lower than you. I'm going beyond that. I'm going to be generous, and I'm giving to you this thing, which is my choice. So you can treat me how you want for the first mile. For the second mile, it's my choice and it's my gift. So all three of these scenarios, I think, echo a Proverbs 25, 21 to 22, which says, if your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. And if he's thirsty, give him water to drink. For you will heap burning coals on his head. Which, when I've heard in the past, I thought, really? You heap burning coals on his head by giving him food and water? And it's kind of counterintuitive. But I think it's true. It's this kind of idea, by being generous to people who aren't being generous to you, it highlights their behaviour. And I thought of another example. I went to see Les Mis recently. Has anyone seen Les Mis? Les Miserables? Yeah. Can anyone remember what happened to Javert? Javert in Les Mis. Do you know what happened to him? Do you know the story?
Yes.
What? Yeah. Can you remember what happened to Javert? Can anyone?
Lots of things.
At the end. Yeah, he kills himself. So Javert is this law-abiding police officer who mercilessly has pursued Jean Valjean over many years. So Jean Valjean stole a loaf of bread, got put in prison, and then he escaped prison and he's branded as a criminal, and Javert tries to track him down, makes his life a misery for years and years and years. And then it's the French Revolution and the rebels are fighting against the French army, and Javert goes to the rebels and says, oh, the French army aren't going to attack tonight, but he's actually being a traitor. He's with the French army and he's just telling the rebels that. And they realise and they want to kill him, but Jean Valjean says, oh no, it's fine, I'll kill him, just leave him to me. And instead of killing him, he spares his life. And Javert is so kind of confused by this, and it just challenges his worldview entirely, because he's been just pursuing what he sees as being right with no compassion. He's just going for Jean Valjean for years and years and years. And then when he turns around and has compassion and spares his life, he's completely tormented and he ends up jumping into the River Seine. So I think that's, you know, a kind of not real life example, but an example of how this generosity can like really turn the situation around and illuminate when people are not being compassionate. So I just wanted to finish by thinking about how we can apply this today, because hopefully we're unlikely to have to get slapped by our master or be sued for our only shirt or forced by a soldier to carry their pack for a mile. So just to say again, this is not applicable in the case of violence or domestic abuse or anything like that. It's more relevant to insults or unfairness or social justice issues. So if we ourselves or we see other people being mistreated, I think it's tempting to either just fight back if we can, or avoid the situation. By analogy to this passage, either to return an eye for an eye by fighting back, or to just take the slap and walk off and just not bother. And I think either of those options is kind of the easier thing to do. But the principle of turning the other cheek would lead us to actually stand against the injustice and in solidarity with the victims and try and shine a light on that situation. So on an individual level, it could be relevant to just dealing with a difficult person, maybe a bully or a manipulator. And turning the other cheek would be a way of standing your ground and communicating, no, you can't take my dignity. I refuse to be belittled and treated in this way. And it's a similar tactic to Martin Luther King Jr. used in his non-violent protests. So instead of fighting back, he just stood his ground and dared his enemies to show even more of their true colours. So although it's kind of passive, it's the opposite of being a doormat. It's trying to find a way to be defiant, which is non-violent or not repaying kind for kind. And on a more societal level, it can be trying to find a way for standing up for social justice, because the Jewish people were under Roman occupation and they were not in a position of power to take on the Roman authorities. So maybe a bit like us today, we're not in a position to directly challenge government policy or that kind of thing, but we can still do things to resist by responding in a way that illuminates the situation. So if we're finding something unfair or, you know, not right, we can name it, we can try and protest non-violently, and we can try and keep those things in the spotlight. So just to conclude, Jesus is not saying that we shouldn't resist evil people or people that seek to do us or other people harm. And he's not this passive figure that we can sometimes imagine. He's being quite defiant here, and he's encouraging us to try and bring about justice in a creative way that refuses to return harm for harm. So turning the other cheek avoids the violent retaliation of just hitting someone back and then that getting out of control. And it also avoids just not doing anything and just taking it and saying, no, I am your inferior, I'll just go off. It's being defiant, and it's trying to turn the tables on the people who are doing harm and illuminating the situation. So it's not an easy thing to do, and it requires us to be quite thoughtful sometimes about our response to things and quite brave, but it can be very effective, and I think it's a good way to model Jesus in our world. So that's the end of the sermon ender. So next I'm going to play a video of a song that I've heard recently and really liked. It's called Gratitude by Brandon Lake. And it's one just to sit and listen to. So you could either